partially or fully excluded from the relief. The HEROES Act of 2003 exempts the need for a notice and comment period during national emergencies, but, like the states, the plaintiffs in this challenge argue that the law doesn't authorize President Biden's sweeping plan.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah wa bithalika umirtu wa ana awalul muslimin qul أَغَيْرَ اللَّهِ أَبْغِي رَبًّا وَهُوَ رَبُّ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ وَلَا تَكْسِبُ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ إِلَّا عَلَيْهَا وَلَا تَزِرُ وَازِرَةٌ أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم لكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iranian Foreign Minister rejects Western media reports about an alleged crackdown on peaceful protests in his country, saying only murderers and terrorists were arrested. The Ukrainian military says fighting is going on in Bakhmut around the clock, with Russian forces trying to encircle the town from three directions. Plus, South Korea and the US plan to carry out large-scale military drills this month, as tensions remain high with the North. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour: Iran's foreign minister has rejected Western media allegations of a crackdown on peaceful protests that hit the country a few months ago. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says no one was arrested during the peaceful rallies. In a tweet, Iran's top diplomat said arrests were made only when the protests took a turn towards rioting, chaos, and violence. Even then, Amir Abdullahian added, only foreign and terrorist elements and troublemakers were arrested. He said the general amnesty that was declared later by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, covered all the arrestees. The decree excluded those who had killed people and terrorists. It was declared on the occasion of the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Iran has strongly condemned Israel's threat to use military force against its non-military and vital infrastructure as a blatant violation of international humanitarian law. Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations said such a move would also contravene the Charter of the United Nations. Amir Saeed Erevani added that any Israeli military attack on Iran's infrastructural facilities would have devastating effects on regional and international peace and security. He urged the Security Council to fulfill its responsibility in this regard and condemned the Israeli regime's warmongering remarks as a real threat to international peace and security.
Erevani emphasized Iran reserves the right to give a crushing response to any wrong step taken by the Zionist regime at any place and any time. He noted that anybody supporting Israel's military action against Iran would also be held to account. Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian teen during a raid in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry has confirmed the death, saying the victim was 15 years old. He was fatally shot in the back near the entrance to the town of Azun, east of Qalqilya. Two more teenagers were also wounded, one critically. The latest death increases the number of Palestinians killed by Israelis this year to 68. According to Palestinian media, 30 lost their lives last month alone. The death toll includes four killed by Israeli settlers. Lebanon is working to prepare the ground for drilling operations in gas fields off its coast. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has more from Lebanon.
With a crippling economy and a local currency losing more than 90% of its value, many of the Lebanese people dealing with economic hardships are hoping that the upcoming drilling activity in Lebanon's waters will lead to the extraction of gas. We are here on the Lebanese southern coast facing Block 9, which includes the Qana field, a prospective gas-rich field where Total Energies is expected to begin drilling this summer. And although it might be a while until the country sees any tangible revenues, many believe it could be the only life buoy for a drowning economy. According to the schedule, the program will continue for over a year, and that they're now waiting for the arrival of a rig that's needed for the drilling operation.
We are very serious about the need to drill as soon as possible and find out if indeed all the hopes and the positive assessments that we heard from and opinions that we heard from the CEOs of Eni and of Total, that indeed we have a promising field in Qana, and that we will indeed have a discovery toward the end of the year. That's our hope.
As officials are working out the logistics for the foreign companies, observers remain worried over a potential intervention by the United States, which has placed many sanctions impacting Lebanon in recent years.
It's about time for the Americans to stop hindering the companies, and also it's about time for the Lebanese government in order to stand still and insist on Lebanese extraction of the oil and the gas.
This place could have been a confrontation ground. Instead, it is witnessing unprecedented tranquility. The 64-year-old Jamal Hamzi is a retired school principal who now spends most of his time in his garden. Like many in the southern border town of Naqoura, he believes that this is all due to the fact that the resistance has deterred the Israeli regime from threatening the area.
Lebanon should be able to drill its gas resources before Israel can start drilling operation in the Karish field. That was the equation that Sayed Hassan Nasrallah raised, and if it weren't for this equation, then we could not talk about drilling in Block 9 or achieve the victories we have had.
The resistance is the only hope we have to be able to restore our rights to our oil and gas resources. We were able to get the maritime deal thanks to the power of the resistance.
Total Energies has stressed that the maritime deal between Lebanon and the Israeli regime ended a deadlock over exploration activities. But some in Lebanon believe Hezbollah might need another round of UAV operations to get the drilling operation on track. Mariam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Turning elsewhere now, Ukrainian forces are struggling to hang on to their positions in Bakhmut, an eastern town that has been the site of the longest and bloodiest battle since the Russia-Ukraine war broke out. The battle for Bakhmut is raging around the clock. That's according to a senior Ukrainian military official. He says the situation is critical and that Kiev needs to get its hands on more ammunition as soon as possible. Ukrainian forces are said to have repelled dozens of Russian attacks in the past 24 hours. The Russians are trying to encircle Bakhmut from the north, east, and south. Capturing the town would enable them to seize the rest of the strategic Donbass region. In the meantime, the Ukrainian military has reported Russian missile attacks in central Zaporizhia region and the southern Kherson region. Our correspondent in Moscow, Johnny Miller, tells us more about the fierce fighting in the Ukrainian town of Bakhmut.
Well, it looks like it's just a matter of time until Ukraine withdraws from Bakhmut. Officially, Ukraine is still saying that they are defending the city, but on the social networks, from more private conversations, it looks very much like it's just a matter of time before Bakhmut falls to Russia. Lots of footage of Ukrainian soldiers trying to get out of Bakhmut, leaving before they are encircled. It's not clear whether Russia is able to completely surround the town, whether there'll be Ukrainian soldiers stuck in that encirclement, or whether they'll be able to get out. But the process of taking Bakhmut still may take some time. Ukraine heavily mines areas they're defending, particularly the retreat from, so they'll take a long time to clear those mines. So it looks like Bakhmut will fall to Russia, but then we expect Ukraine to move back to more defensive lines. Still some major settlements in the Donbass to take. So the war for Donbass still far from over. But Russia at the moment very much focusing, instead of necessarily capturing territory, it's focusing on destroying the Ukrainian army as much as possible. And that for that reason, Bakhmut has been a success for Russia, as Ukraine has sent constant streams of reinforcements into Bakhmut, and the casualties on the Ukrainian side in Bakhmut have been huge.
Hundreds of thousands of teachers in the UK are on a three-day strike to demand higher pay and more funding for the schools. This has forced millions of kids to stay at home. The government says higher pay rises would worsen the country's inflation that's now at more than 10%. Saeed Pereza reports from a teachers' rally in northwest London.
It's walkout Thursday in Britain as tens of thousands of teachers walk off the job once again. Sapna has been a teacher for 11 years.
Now it just feels like we've got to carry on with the strikes because they're not listening to us. They're not valuing us and they're not giving us what we want, better conditions, better pay, and all of that really.
This is day three of a nationwide strike that has forced thousands of schools closed or partially closed, affecting millions of students.
Teachers, like the tens of thousands of others across the country, are here today to make sure their voices are heard. They're part of a wave of industrial action across the different sectors of the economy, all calling on the government for pay rises that match the soaring inflation.
Teachers' unions are also hitting out at leaked text messages between disgraced former Health Minister Matt Hancock and former Education Minister Gavin Williamson, in which the latter describes teachers as skivers. That, in addition to a leaked report last year that hundreds of schools in England were dilapidated and at risk of collapsing. Despite that and a massive strike last month, the government has refused to budge.
We've actually given teachers the highest pay rise in 30 years. It includes a 9% pay rise for newly qualified teachers and record investment in their training and development.
To the National Education Union, who accused the government of refusing meaningful talks, that is simply not true.
We were offered 5% for teachers at some points on the scale, less than that for others. And because we've had a pay freeze for loads of successive years since 2010, and then a few pay awards that were either below or in line with inflation, that's effectively another pay cut.
The next strike is planned for March 15. If there's no movement on pay, we're likely to see more strikes, not just from the teachers like Sapna, but workers in other key professions, who at least for now, enjoy broad public support. Saeed Pereza, London.
And turning to other news now, the United States and South Korea will hold large-scale military drills later this month, despite a stern warning from North Korea. South Korea's military says the exercises will focus on countering threats from Pyongyang.
The joint exercise is designed to strengthen response capabilities of the alliance by focusing within the exercise scenario on the changing threats and security environment, such as North Korea's advanced nuclear and missile program and lessons learned from recent wars and conflicts.
The drills, dubbed the Freedom Shield, include amphibious landings. The 10-day maneuvers will kick off on March 13. They feature field exercises on a scale not seen in years. Last month, North Korea cautioned that it would take an unprecedented action if the two allies go ahead with their drills. Pyongyang has repeatedly rebuked Seoul and Washington for their frequent muscle flexing around the Korean Peninsula. It says the two countries' joint drills are actually rehearsals for an invasion. North Korea usually responds to such drills by carrying out missile tests. And in South Korea, the families of the victims of the Seoul Halloween disaster have marched through the streets of the capital city. They are pressing ahead with their demand for a sincere apology and the assumption of responsibility by senior officials. Nearly 160 people lost their lives in the crowd, the crush. Frank Smith has this report from Seoul.
At Seoul City Hall, the families of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and their supporters gathered to pay their respects at a temporary memorial and to press the government to apologize and punish those ultimately responsible. Kim Hae-in's brother, Woo Hyun, was among the 159 people killed in the crowd crush last Halloween.
They didn't do anything before to prevent the disaster, and they're still not doing anything. That's why we're out here. The higher-ups who should take responsibility and prevent this from happening are just shifting the blame to others.
Two separate probes, one by the police and another by lawmakers at the National Assembly, resulted in the indictment of several lower-level police and local officials. The aftermath of the Itaewon tragedy quickly turned political. The conservative Minister of Interior and Safety, Lee Sang-min, initially suggested the disaster could not have been prevented, angering families of the victims. The democratically controlled National Assembly voted to impeach Lee last month. Officials knew tens of thousands of young people would gather in Itaewon that night, yet no crowd control measures were taken. Beginning at 6:34 p.m., hours before the crowd crush, more than 10 emergency calls warned the police of overcrowding.
Holding the people accountable and getting them to resign can offer the families some consolation and honor the victims. But the government is not now taking those steps, as if the government is not responsible for anything. It's shameful.
Of those that died, 26 were foreigners, including 5 Iranian exchange students. As families of the victims and their supporters marched to the presidential office, they again called for truth and justice and a proper memorial to their lost loved ones. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Turning now to Colombia, where a police officer and a civilian have been killed during protests against an oil company. Police sources say the victims died from gunshot wounds. The protests took place by members of rural and indigenous communities in San Vicente del Caguan. That's a town in southern Colombia. Protesters took hostage nearly 90 people, including police officers and oil field workers. Now, President Gustavo Petro has denounced the violence, ordering defense and interior officials to the region. He called for an investigation by the Attorney General's office. That brings an end to International Bulletin for this hour.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Iran's domestic production capacities. As you know, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has named every Iranian calendar year with a theme which fits to the conditions of the time. The leader named the current Iranian year as the year of production, knowledge-based job creation. The themes of the year are chosen by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei to motivate officials and the people towards putting the internal potential capacities into effect to push the country under course of progress. Thus, we have prepared a series of brief reviews of Iran's capacities in various fields. In a couple of episodes of this series, we have dwelt upon the reasons for the leader's high emphasis on production and manufacturing. Please stay with us. Erik Reinert, the Norwegian economist and author, has written in his book, The Richness of Rich Countries and the Poverty of Poor Countries, that for the past few centuries, rich countries have gained a strategic advantage, namely a powerful and high-quality production to create wealth and national might. The reason for the emphasis that the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has put on production and manufacturing is that a great bulk of Iran's domestic capacities has been neglected. Putting these capacities into effect can both decrease economic problems and promote Iran's position within the global system. There are very great potentials in the industrial, mineral, agricultural, petrochemical, and other fields, each of which can act as a basis for development of production and growth of Iran's economy. Proper usage of these potentials and opportunities will provide appropriate conditions to enhance the economy and reduce dependence on foreign products. Studies have shown that the illegally imposed sanctions on Iran have been effective nearly 30% on Iran's economy, while the share of inattention to domestic capacities has been about 70%. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, predicted in 2014 that if Iran uses its economic capacities, it will increase its production up to $43 trillion until 2050. This will take place with fundamental changes in economic growth via correct exploitation of agricultural, oil and gas, and knowledge-based economy. According to the forecast, the Islamic Republic of Iran is capable of increasing its current production by up to 30 times. Iran is on the first global rank in terms of intact economic capacities. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says in the statement of the Islamic Revolution's second phase, he says, the country's material opportunities form a long list, which efficient, motivated, and capable managers can activate and exploit to increase national revenues with a clear leap and make the country rich, self-sufficient, and self-confident in the real sense of the word, and remove current problems. The Islamic Republic of Iran, with about 1% of the world's population, has about 7% of the global mineral wealth of this planet. Some of the huge potential of Iran's economy includes great underground resources, exceptional geographical location, being located between the east and the west and the north and the south, a huge internal market, huge regional market having 15 neighboring countries with a total population of 600 million. A long coastline stretching thousands of kilometers. Exceptionally good soil for agriculture and horticultural products. Great and varied economy. All these are part of Iran's huge potential. Many of these capacities have remained intact. It has been said that Iran stands firm in terms of unused natural and human capacities in the world. No doubt, your faithful and hard-working youth will manage to remove this big flaw. The second decade of the perspective should be the period of concentration on exploitation of the past achievements and also unused capacities and the country's progress should promote, including in the section of production, manufacturing and economy. Making better use of Iran's neglected capacities will certainly boost relations with neighboring countries. Most countries which neighbor Iran are oil-exporting nations, and there'll be plenty of opportunities to develop business opportunities with them further. Having land and sea borders with 15 nations, the Islamic Republic of Iran has successfully overcome sanctions imposed by the West, focusing on trade interactions and transfer of money. Due to shared borders with these nations, it is hard for the enemies to monitor transportation system and trade interactions between neighboring countries. Thank God, this has helped Iran to in its trade dealings and financial transactions with neighboring countries. Moreover, long distance is an important factor of increasing expenses of export and import. This is very low for Iran and neighboring countries due to close geographical location. Therefore, national production will put into effect potential capacities and will help create jobs, increase goods and services, decrease inflation, reduce impact of foreign pressure, reduce poverty, and improve people's livelihood. National production and manufacturing means support for Iranian workforce and support for Iran's investment. This will promote social justice within the country and will make us a powerful nation, much to the annoyance of our enemies.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Few days had passed since the Palestinian Authority's acceptance of the American offer based on its abstention from any unilateral steps at the UNSC and improving its performance in tracking the resistance fighters in hotbeds of tension in the West Bank in return for vague financial and political promises was revealed until an Israeli brutal aggression hit the old city of Nablus. a severe blow in which the enemy did not observe any of the humanitarian standards that are supposed to be followed in military operations, repeating in a more horrific way the two massacres that it committed in the Jenin and Aqaba Jabr camps between late January and mid-February, so that the result would be the fall of 10 martyrs, including defenseless elderly people and dozens of injuries. The Zionist occupation forces were able to settle their score with the freedom fighters of the Shafi Shamron operation, Muhammad Abu Bakr al-Junaidi and Hussam Sleem, who were martyred after their house was surrounded and supplies were cut off from them. The aggression began in the early hours of Wednesday, February 22, when an intense flight of drones was observed in the sky of the old city of Nablus, coinciding with the hidden deployment of dozens of snipers who were stationed at the foot of Mount Ebal at some tall buildings overlooking the targeted house. At exactly 10 o'clock, a civilian truck carrying the logo East Transportation, carrying a special Israeli force from the Yamam unit, crept into the eastern market area and surrounded a stone house before launching its attack by firing a missile directed at the house in which the two resistance fighters, Al-Junaidi and Sleem, were residing at. In the streets of the old city, violent clashes erupted between enemy soldiers on the one hand and the resistance fighters on the Nablus battalion and the Balata battalion, whose fighters arrived in the old city in an attempt to break the siege on the resistance fighters. Then later, groups from the Jenin Brigade arrived at the place, while the Lion's Den group, through mosque loudspeakers, appealed to the city residents to go out and confront the occupation forces, which were beginning to double their pressure on the two besieged young men by bombing the house with more than 5 guided missiles, which cost the militia of the house, in addition to the use of helicopters, drones, and tear gas canisters. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, the Israeli aggression on the city of Nablus caused the death of 10 citizens, including Al-Junaidi and Sleem, in addition to the elderly Adnan Bara, 72 years, Muhammad Anbusi, 25 years, Tamir Minawi, 33 years, Mus'ab Awais, 26 years, Muhammad Abdel Ghani, 23 years, Walid Dakhil, 23 years, Abdel Hadi Ashqar, 61 years, Muhammad Sha'ban, 16 years, and Jasir Qan'ir, 23 years old. Thousands of citizens circulated on social media the testament of the two martyrs, Al-Junaidi and Sleem, vowing to avenge their martyrdom in a way the occupation have never seen before. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. In a bloody aggression that resulted in the death of 10 Palestinians and the injury of more than 100 others, the Zionist occupation army rained the streets of the old city of Nablus with bullets, where violent clashes erupted between enemy soldiers on the one hand and the resistance fighters of the Nablus battalion and the Balata battalion and the Lion's Den, whose fighters arrived in the old city in an attempt to break the siege on the resistance fighters under fire. To discuss this issue with us from the occupied West Bank in Jenin camp is Mr. Mohammed Jaradat, author, academic, and political commentator. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed, for being with us. Now, under American pressure, just days after the Palestinian Authority actually backed down from the draft resolution condemning the Israeli entity in the UNSC, the Zionist enemy committed a new massacre in the old city of Nablus, which basically prompted an automatic belief that this concession encouraged the occupation, this concession by the Palestinian Authority actually encouraged the occupation to commit this massacre, especially in the light that Tel Aviv is in denial of any binding understandings with Ramallah to begin with. But in all fairness here, when has Israel ever conceded to any agreement with the Palestinian Authority?
On the contrary, the Israeli occupier not only does not abide by the agreements, if he only did not abide by the agreements, it would have been half a misfortune for us, the Palestinian people, and the Arab and Islamic nation with this brutal Israeli occupier. The fact is that this enemy takes advantage of every agreement signed by the Palestinian Authority or any Arab or Islamic party with it, whether it is a normalization, political, security agreement, or even in trade and economy, exploiting it to penetrate the blood of the Palestinians. This is like the scene that took place in Nablus recently and before that in Jenin. And it takes place in Gaza every year or two. We also saw it at the crossroads in the town of Hawara yesterday. The town of Hawara was a great witness to their brutality. The small and meek town of Hawara, which is a commercial market through which settlers and soldiers pass to delve into Palestinian blood. The Israeli enemy exploits all agreements with the Palestinian Authority. When the Authority signed the armistice for a period of 4 months in order to stop the settlement expansion that ate whatever Palestinian land was left, we saw that this occupier attacked Nablus and plunged into its blood. We are not only talking about the martyrdom of 11 Palestinians, but rather about more than 100 wounded, most of whose wounds are serious. Nablus hospitals are still, until this moment, crowded with the wounded, who require extensive surgeries. Therefore, the Palestinian Authority made a big mistake with these agreements. With the Authority going to the Aqaba security meeting, it made the second mistake within just a few days.
Well, Mr. Mohammed, yet also, to be also fair, the massacre in Nablus proved once again that the Authority did not consider 3 decades of panting behind the so-called peace with the Zionist entity and its agreements, and that it is unable to leave its actual comfort zone in which it has become stuck in reality. Even it is still trying, every time the entity commits a crime, the Palestinian Authority tries to find some palliatives to the Palestinian anger. Doesn't that just motivate the Palestinians of the West Bank and the occupied Al-Quds as well to denounce the Palestinian Authority once and for all as unable to truly represent the will of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance?
This is what really happened. The Palestinian Authority has fallen between the jaws of the occupier, who is exploiting its weakness, and the angry, defenseless Palestinian people, who find what is going on, whether in withdrawing the complaint from the Security Council against settlements or in going to the Aqaba security meeting where the maze is useless. This was formed in the awareness of these young men in Jenin and Nablus. It was formed in their awareness that the Authority participates with the occupier in security coordination and in their pursuit of the resistance heroes who were trying to reach the sources of strength and brutality of the occupier, to strike him and to inflict retribution on him and his settlers as a result of every brutal massacre perpetrated by the occupation. This Authority, according to its organizational structure, is not qualified to get out of the maze into which it entered. When we talk about American pressure on the PA, or we talk about getting lost between the jaws of the wild right-wing coalition between the Likud and the religious Zionism, this Palestinian Authority is unable to get out of this political charade, and it also cannot change its nature, which was built on the basis of economic corruption and on the basis of marginalization of the honorable class in it. Yes, there is an honorable group in it. The network was built through some of them. But with the passage of time, gradually the crew who live on these economic gains like the Paris Agreement and whatnot began to distance themselves from the reality of the goals of the Palestinian cause. Even from the perspective of Oslo thought, or the thought of the PLO that signed the agreement to recognize Israel's legitimacy, the agreement for which we are still paying the price every day.
Well, it is very clear now that Washington will not be able, by taming the Palestinian Authority, to control the dynamics of the Palestinian street, who is boiling, has reached levels that are closer to an explosion than any other time in the past, especially after what we saw happened in Hawara yesterday. While the resistance in Gaza is also not far from the line of engagement, after we also saw missiles from the Gaza Strip falling on the Israeli entity's settlements just after the Nablus massacre. How likely do you think is a joint Gaza-West Bank operation in light of the constant Zionist violence against the Palestinians?
It is normal for there to be sharing and burden-bearing between the West Bank, Gaza, Al-Quds, and the occupied interior. And even with the access of resistance countries that support the Palestinian cause, who pay exorbitant prices for this support from their people, money, political stances, and the siege they are exposed to. On the Palestinian cause today, through the daily massacres carried out by the Israeli occupier, we see the Palestinians standing alone. This Palestinian citizen, whom we saw yesterday near Hawara, when he was able to reach 2 settlers, one of whom is an officer in a special force in the army and the other a student at the military college in the occupation army. These two settlers who were killed yesterday near Hawara and the massacre that followed via arson and killing committed by settlers with the protection of the Israeli occupation army. So what do they think the Palestinian people will do when a knife is stuck in their neck? Resistance heroes come out from here and there in Al-Quds, Jenin and Nablus to defend their people by searching for an opportunity in light of the repression and the security pressure exerted by this occupier. But no matter how strong this occupier is, his weaknesses remain. Its weaknesses lies in its strength, and the strength of the Palestinian people lie in their weakness. This equation is the equation of strategic patience and the preoccupation practiced by the Palestinian. Whether on the individual or factional level, that constitutes an incubator and amendable to steadfastness, confrontation and victory that will be achieved one day.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammad Jradad, author, academic and political commentator, for joining us from Jenin to talk about the Nablus massacre committed by the aggressor, the Zionist entity. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned because we are moving from Palestine to Lebanon, where a new British company has been found liable in the Beirut port explosion of 2020.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
A British court has ruled a London-based company that delivered the explosive ammonium nitrate to Beirut's port is liable towards the victims of the devastating 2020 Beirut port blast, according to Lebanon's Lawyers Bar Association. On August 4 that year, hundreds of tons of the chemical typically used in fertilizers detonated, killing more than 218 people, injuring over 6,000 and damaging large parts of Beirut. Families of the explosion's victims saw the development as a rare step towards justice and against the political intervention that has obstructed the investigative judge leading a probe in Lebanon for over 2 years now. More details in this following report.
At a time when the political authority in Lebanon and its judicial affiliates are obstructing the progress of the investigation into the Beirut port explosion, a team of Lebanese lawyers achieved what they perceived as a small victory abroad in the process of searching for the truth and determining responsibilities. Their victory was registered against a British company known as Savaro Limited, which was responsible for supplying the shipment of ammonium nitrate that exploded in Ward No. 12 in the port of the capital Beirut, wreaking havoc in the city. According to the Telegraph newspaper, a chemical company registered in the United Kingdom was found responsible before the High Court in London for the Beirut port explosion that killed more than 200 people. The Beirut port explosion killed at least 218 people, including Lebanese citizens and others of different nationalities, and injured more than 7,000 others, and resulted in huge material losses estimated at billions of dollars. In return, the prosecution office of the Beirut Bar Association announced on Thursday, February 23, the issuance of the first judicial ruling outside Lebanon in the case of the port bombing that occurred on August 4, 2020. The Office of the Prosecution for the Port Explosion said in a statement, "The British High Court of Justice in London issued a ruling in favor of the victims represented by the Office of the Prosecution against the English company Savaro Limited, responsible for the shipment of ammonium nitrate that exploded in the port of Beirut, and that the second phase of the trial opened, which is the stage of determining the value of the compensation that will be due to the victims." But who is behind Savaro Limited? Savaro was established on June 9, 2006 in the British capital for the wholesale of chemical products. When searching for the details of the company, only the name of the Ukrainian businessman Hilyachenko is found, while all the other employees resigned successively between 2008 and 2021. An investigation by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project revealed that the company is a front company for a network of companies based in Dnipro, Ukraine, and part of a large project trading in technical-grade fertilizers that go into the manufacture of explosives. So who really is behind this company is still unknown. The Public Prosecution Office had filed a civil lawsuit in August 2021 against the London-registered Savaro Chemicals Company, which leased the ammonium nitrate shipment in 2013 to end up in Beirut. The company is owned by Ukrainian businessman Vladimir Hilyachenko and is run by a network of businessmen. To evade responsibility, the company attempted to liquidate its business and deregister itself from the British Companies Register 2 years ago. The evidence also showed the inaction of the Lebanese officials in the context of corruption and mismanagement by those in charge for a long time at the port, which allowed a chemical with such a high explosive potential to be stored there indiscriminately and in an unsafe manner for nearly 6 years, according to a report issued by Human Rights Watch. The organization indicated that many of Lebanon's senior leaders were informed of the dangers posed by ammonium nitrate, yet chose not to take the necessary measures to protect their people.
Now, to discuss this topic with us from the state of Georgia is Chris Weaver, a co-host of Twice Told Tales. Thank you very much, Chris, for being with us to discuss this new so-called victory in Lebanon. But let's discuss if it is actually a victory or not. And now we have lawyer Professor Nasri Diab and lawyer Camille Abu Sulaiman, who are in charge of this lawsuit in the UK, emphasize the fundamental importance of this ruling at the UK High Court, as it is the first judicial decision to name one of those responsible for the 2020 catastrophe in Beirut, constituting the first judicially established incident, which, according to them, opens the door for the prosecution of other officials inside Lebanon. But against whom is this victory, Chris, if the founders of Savaro Limited are still up until now unknown?
Well, I mean, to me, it just seems like a show trial. It really immediately made me think of the 2018 New York case where Iran was forced basically to pay billions of dollars because America had seized the assets of Iran due to sanctions, and they just gave that money away in a court case because Iran is supposedly responsible for 9/11. So, I mean, you can have show trials that are politicized, and then the people who are being prosecuted are basically immobilized. And in this case, we don't know the nature of this company. But I think more importantly, if you're any of the people who potentially could be brought to trial based on this lawsuit or even in this lawsuit, is I don't think you even need a lawyer. I think you just need a high school chemistry teacher, because you need, in order for ammonium nitrate to be a high explosive, it has to be mixed uniformly with fuel oil. That's why it's called an ANFO bomb, ammonium nitrate fuel oil. The fuel oil part is very important. It can't just be a little spill of fuel oil at the port that may have touched some fertilizer. That's not, it needs to be very carefully mixed so it's homogenized. And how did that happen? That's not being explained. How did ammonium nitrate attracts water molecules? It's hydrophilic. So if you store it near the port for 6 years, it's going to be bricks. It's going to be unsellable as fertilizer, and it's going to be very difficult to mix with fuel oil. And whether the fuel oil would even work in that case because there's water there, it's just the whole story. And then you would need an explosive to set off that charge, like inside of it. That it doesn't, you can't just light it on fire. Anyone, go try and light your fertilizer on fire. It won't light. It's very stable.
So the theory that you are actually maybe leaning towards, Chris, is that there has been some sort of a planned detonation that happened that would allow such an amount of ammonium nitrate to explode.
I mean, it could be anything. That's
place.
The thing. Like,
but look, you know what's really interesting for me, Chris, is that with the information that was provided to us, which was less than a paragraph coming from this supposed UK court. I just surfed the internet for like 2 minutes to look about all around about what Savaro is and who's behind it, if there is actual evidence of who's behind it. But I saw that it's directly linked to Cypriot and Lithuanian businessmen residing in Nicosia, Cyprus. But the Lebanese prosecuting office somehow is being oriented towards three Russian-Syrian businessmen who have been sanctioned, by the way, by the United States of America, these three businessmen in 2016 for allegedly being close to the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. They are George Haswani, Mudallal Khoury, and Imad Khoury, who openly claimed in a report that is found online where they gave interviews to Reuters, and they said that they had no connections whatsoever to Savaro, but their company, their marine company that actually transports goods, is registered with the same agent company found in Cyprus. So we're going back to Cyprus and Ukraine for the actual basic source of where that ammonium nitrate came. But is this an attempt now to evade responsibility from real perpetrators who might actually have done something illegal in Lebanon and turn it into a political indictment against Syria? Or am I just being a bit paranoid here?
Well, I mean, anything could happen. Like, I personally think it's possible it was a missile strike. I mean, there were evidence of planes flying over the port at that moment. So that's possible. And then it's just a cover-up to prevent a larger war. But I think in this case, what you just said, it's obvious that just follow the money. I mean, where could you easily get money from people who aren't going to be able to complain? It's someone who's been sanctioned and their money is being held and frozen in bank accounts that can be, you know, that their money can just be turned over without any fight, without any ability for them to fight back. So that's exactly what they did with the Iranian government in 2018 with that court case. So it sounds logical to turn to the guys whose money is sanctioned and just take their money, basically. So they're just creating a pretext with a show trial to figure out how to get money out of some guy's mm-hmm. bank accounts who can't fight
well,
back.
Well, as a Lebanese citizen myself here, Chris, one important question keeps popping in my head since there are links in this case that would lead to unveiling the truth behind who is really responsible in this national catastrophe that actually struck Lebanon. Why has the Beirut investigations in the explosion been frozen for the past 2.5 years now? And who's benefiting from actually hiding the truth if no one wants to be shown or portrayed as responsible? What's your take on that? Why do you think that the investigation was suspended?
Well, like I said, I think the whole story doesn't make sense from the beginning. The first time I heard it, I listened to it. And I was like, what? Because I know, I've used fertilizer all the time. Like, I've never been afraid of it. It's very stable. So mm-hmm. it makes no sense. And there's got to be more to the story. So obviously they've covered it up and because they don't want people looking at it. But I would just recommend just get some chemists, interview a chemist. I'm not a chemist, but interview a chemist to ask them how you could have ammonium nitrate explode without fuel oil. It doesn't work. So I would say, you know, they're probably, sadly, I really respect Lebanon as a genuine component of the resistance access there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if this is a trial in which people in the Lebanese government know they're covering for Israeli missile strike and that they would, you know, prefer to do that rather than launch an all-out war, you know, I can understand that, but it's also kind of a depressing thought, so...
Definitely.
I don't know, but I would just encourage everyone involved, including the legal teams there, to ask better questions mm-hmm. because it doesn't make any sense.
Definitely, because I actually believe there is more sense in the questions that you actually asked, Chris, than the small paragraph that was initiated by the Beirut Bar of Association telling us that, yay, we won something against someone, but that someone is non-existent, and that something killed more than 200 people in Lebanon and put 7,000 humans in hospitals because of it. And I myself think that this is something bigger than what is being told in the media. But I want to thank you very much, Chris Waver, co-host of Twice Told Tales, for giving us the time and the energy to discuss this very pressing issue right now in Lebanon. And ladies and gents, I want to thank you very much. I'll see you again next week. Assalamu alaikum.
in the limelight.
The latest government statistics show that the price of food in United Kingdom is increasing rapidly, and the continuing of the situation has seriously put the issue of food security in headlines. Rising food prices are a real concern in the United Kingdom, with studies showing that millions of consumers already skipping meals or struggling to put healthy meals on the table. We have taken a look at the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Russia Today has covered this issue and tells us more. According to the latest figures released by market researcher Kantar on Tuesday, 28th of February, grocery prices in the United Kingdom have surged to a new record of 17.1% in the 4 weeks of February. Data showed milk, eggs and margarine are showing the fastest price growth. The report says food inflation in the country is at its highest since the firm started tracking the figures in 2008, adding £811 to the typical annual shopping bill and forcing British households to change their consumption habits. The head of retail and consumer insight at Kantar, Fraser McKibbitt, said,